Welcome to this episode of our show, True Data Ops. I'm your host, Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior. In each episode, we're going to bring you a podcast discussing the world of data ops with the people that are making data ops what it is today. So be sure to look up and subscribe to the dataops.live YouTube channel, because that's where you're going to find all the recordings for our past episodes. So if you missed any of the prior episodes, we're far into season 3 now, so there's quite a few episodes if you haven't seen them all. Now's your chance to catch up. Now, better yet, if you just go to truedataops.org, you can subscribe to the podcast, and then you'll get proactive notifications on the next episodes and who my guests are going to be. So my guest today is Professor Barzan Mozafari. He's the co-founder and CEO of Kibo. Is it Kibo? I got to get that pronunciation right. Welcome to the show, Professor.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken.
So if you would, you know, tell our guests a little bit about your background, data management, and your career, and also a little bit about what you are a professor of.
Sure. So first of all, I want to apologize to your audience. My voice is a bit hoarse today. I've been something kind of cold. I don't think I've quite recovered from it yet. I was in academia prior to starting Kibo. I was a professor of computer science. With a specialization in machine learning, AI, and database systems prior to founding Kibo. Before that, I was at MIT, UC Berkeley, and UCLA. Before that, also worked for a number of startups and large companies along the way. Some of the work we've done is now part of the open source community, part of the MySQL ecosystem. But part of it has been commercialized and acquired by bigger companies. I would just sum up my last two decades of career essentially as working at the intersection of machine learning and database systems. How do we use AI to build smarter data systems, where smarter could mean more autonomous, faster, more scalable, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's certainly, the industry is all abuzz about that these days. So tell us a little bit about Kibo and, tell the folks the story of where the name comes from and what it means as well. I think that's an interesting story too.
Well, absolutely. So Kibo is an American pronunciation of the word kibu, which means hope in Japanese. So one body of work that a lot of people know me for was is the work I did, early work I did on approximate query processing. It was an open source project called BlimpDB that later led to VerdictDB and Snappy Data and a few other spin-offs that basically followed. The idea was, hey, if you have a lot of data that you cannot process, how can you look at a very small portion of it and still get a 99% accurate answer? And the idea is, like, the volume of data that's being generated and stored and queried is actually more than doubling every 2 years. So in other words, if you're just waiting for the Moore's law, if you're just waiting for hardware to get faster and cheaper, you're never going to catch up.
It can't catch up, right? Yeah.
Because, like, you know, Moore's law is an exponential plot, is an exponential curve. And now data is growing also exponentially by a faster rate. So for the mathematicians in your audience, when you have two exponential graphs, once one of them growing fast at a faster rate than the other, that gap only gets wider.
It does this.
Exactly. So, you know, the idea was, if you're happy with the performance you're getting from your data system this year, you're going to be sad next year. But if you're sad, you're going to be depressed. Essentially, the idea was, can we come up with a solution that allows data teams to get much better performance at a much lower cost from their database system, from the data warehouse? So that's why we came up with the name Kibo. It's like, when all other hope is lost, there's Kibo.
Yeah.
That's how I came up.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I remember talking to Guy Adams about this problem a couple of years ago, and we were talking specifically about things like time series databases and IoT, right? He was dealing with a lot of data coming in from satellites, and it was just coming in, like you said, so fast, and trying to figure out, is there a way to just take a portion of that data and have the projections and everything actually come out, like you said, 99% accurate without having to go through all of the data, because the compute can't keep up. And that was a couple of years ago. And obviously you ran into exactly the same problem. So that's what the problem you're trying to solve, right?
Yeah, but just like to be perfectly clear, that's where the journey started for Kibo. But today we don't actually give approximate answers. We help customers still get 100% accurate process the entire data, but we leverage AI. So what Kibo is a data learning platform. The concept of data learning is something that one of my former PhD students and myself came up with. The idea of data learning is to learn from how users and applications interact with the data in the cloud, and then use that to automate and accelerate the tedious aspects of the interaction between the data team and the data in the cloud. So for example, you know, if you're a Snowflake or Databricks customers, our technology allows you to actually query it a lot more efficiently at a fraction of the cost without having to lift a finger, without having to migrate your data out of your cloud data warehouse. So we're helping data teams get a lot more done with less.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, this season on our podcast, we've been trying to take a little bit of a step back and think about how the world of true data ops, databases has evolved really in the last couple of years. And obviously, you know, you've been an innovator in this field yourself. And really, as you just said, you're really helping the customers take best advantage of that data, particularly using AI. So could you tell us a little bit about what you've seen in the space and how it has evolved from your perspective over the last couple of years? And what are you seeing your clients, you know, do today? What are their challenges and what are they trying to do?
I think there's two aspects to it, right? Like if you sort of like widen that window a little longer, like just look like at the last 5 years, like the trend is pretty clear that the likes of Snowflake and other cloud data warehouses have significantly reduced the adoption barrier. Now, they've enabled companies and organizations of all sizes, like whether it's a startup of two people or a massive, you know, Fortune 100 company with like 50,000 employees, any data team can quickly tap into data and get insight from it. So it's not that, you know, you need a DBA and an IT department that owns the data warehouse anymore. Anyone can get up to speed and upload their data and start querying it right away and start getting value right away. But I would say that's a good part of it. But there's a side effect to it, that because it's so much easier now, organizations are querying more data sources, querying more data, and more users are querying that data. So the complexity of the data pipelines that the teams are actually creating on top of these modern cloud data warehouses like Snowflake or Databricks is at least 10 times the complexity of what they used to be 10 years ago. Even 5 years ago, like I forgot the exact study, but like there are studies that actually reporting insane number of data sources that are being combined. But with this complexity, it's virtually impossible for data teams to manually optimize these things, right? Because and the cost of cloud infrastructure is going through the roof. Like we have customers who are less than 1,000 employees are spending, you know, more than $10, $20 million a year on their Snowflake, just the cost of Snowflake itself. And just imagine how much that, you know, larger companies are spending there. So I think the trend we're seeing is that people are realizing this complexity and they're taking one of the two choices. The teams that are agile are adopting buying tools that help them manage that complexity, improve their performance, reduce their cost of infrastructure automatically. And then there's a second group of companies where they try to actually build all of that in-house.
Yeah.
Right. There's the typical build versus buy. Obviously, you know, I think the people on the left side, like with all the stuff that we're happening, all the progress we've seen on the adoption of AI and Gen AI, I think we're seeing that the first group is growing, and those who are trying to build everything in-house, that group is shrinking. And I can talk more about why that's happening. But I think we're trying to be on the right side of history. This is where we're seeing the biggest adoption.
Right. You're trying to really, as we said, it's grown so much, it's gotten so complex. The big challenge is how do we derive the value from the data at a lower cost point? Well, it looks like your video just went out. There it is. It's back.
I have three different cameras are sometimes they keep
they interrupt each other. Yeah, technology. That's, you know, we still haven't got that figured out. So, you know, talking about all of this, and obviously to do all this, we're managing a lot of data. Things are changing all the time. So, from your perspective, how would you define data ops and its importance in this type of ecosystem?
So there's many different definitions of data ops. I would say anything that you have to do to take data from its source, integrate it, transform it, and load it into your data system, and then enable the upstream applications to actually be able to get insight from it, I call that entire pipeline data ops. Anyone who's involved at every step of that process, whether it's all the way right beneath the BI reporting layer, all the way to, you know, cleaning the data, transforming the data, ingesting that data, I call that entire process data ops.
Yeah, and the governance and change control and all of that, systems get bigger, that gets even more challenging, right?
For sure, absolutely. In fact, that's one of the biggest priorities for a lot of CIOs these days, is that data governance. It's like, okay, we've democratized data, but how do we still maintain governance, right? Like, it's not a centralized IT department which had to, you know, approve every report, and they spend a week building a dashboard for you or generating a report for you. So now that things have been distributed across the organization, how do you maintain governance? How do you remain compliant? How do we basically ensure privacy, security, permissions, access control, all of that stuff, while still allowing for a faster adoption and all of that?
Yeah, and that all becomes part of this data ops landscape, is doing all that. It's no longer, and I guess, you know, since you've been working in machine learning and AI with databases for quite some time, this is years ago when I first started in data, you know, data governance was kind of like a sideline, and you had a data governance team and, you know, data governance programs and all that, and only the largest companies and ones in highly regulated industries seem to really be interested in it. But as you're feeding all of this data now into machine learning algorithms in hopes of enabling some, I guess, you know, productive AI usage of your data, how much more important do you think the governance has become to the CIOs and CDOs that you're dealing with?
Sorry, I was muted for a second. I think you're spot on. One of the most interesting things now is that you don't have to be a Fortune 500 company to worry about compliance and governance. In fact, the democratization of data has allowed companies of much smaller sizes to be able to deliver value. If you give them access to your data, they can deliver more value to you if you give them access to your data. And oftentimes they themselves possess really sensitive data from their customers, healthcare, PII data, all of that. So there is definitely a very clear trend that people care about this stuff because of, you know, whenever there's legal consequences, right? You see people paying attention and paying top dollars. So I think compliance is definitely a more pronounced issue across the board. It used to be just the bigger companies that had to worry about it, if you have certain verticals and industries. But now anyone who has access to customer data, to sensitive data, or, you know, in fact, it's even more important because smaller companies, when they approach clients, they have to provide those same assurances that they actually, you know, they're compliant, they're not going to misuse their data, all of that stuff. So if you think about data as being that entire life cycle of processing, acquiring, cleaning data, transforming it to analytics and so on, compliance is something that actually is important. It's top of mind every step of the way. So definitely this is something that pretty much, I mean, we rarely run into a CIO that tells us, I don't care about compliance. And that's why at Kibo, one of the key values we provide our customers is we're giving them the ability to, we've recently launched this concept called smart query routing. And what it really does is that it decouples application performance from application logic so that you can have your data teams just worry about you know, just writing the correct query, so to say, because typically anyone who's writing a data application, they have to constantly worry about both, right? They have to constantly juggle, am I doing the right thing, but is it going to be performant? Am I going to get yelled at when people see the bill, you know, their Snowflake bill going through the roof or not? So they're constantly juggling this thing. And quite honestly, human mind is not designed to sort of handle this level of complexity. So most of the time, what comes out the other end is not exactly optimal, especially that a lot of these data teams are not people who have a degree in computer science, right? Like, you know, there's more data analysts and there's, you know, people who specialize in, you know, supply chain management, or people who are using BI tools to actually create these queries on their behalf. So when you think about it this way, we start creating the smart query routing where we decouple those two. So we tell the data teams, write the queries that you want, but there's this smart query routing piece in the middle that takes care of all your performance concerns, but you can also inject any policy about compliance, about security, about permissions. And that still gives a centralized point of accountability and policy enforcement across the organization without taking away the power from the teams to actually focus on deriving value from their own data.
Yeah. So the increase in the need to be concerned about compliance has pushed the interest in governance and really the need for having more active governance on the data. What about from the perspective of the, you know, I guess, trusting the data and really having clean data feeding into the algorithms? Have you seen an increase in, the need for governance because of things like that?
So, you know, traditionally, there's this saying like garbage in, garbage out, right?
Right.
If your data is not accurate, you can't expect, you know, your model to perform well. Like if you're training on data that's not clean. I think there's two competing trends happening there, right? I think what we've seen with LLMs and Gen AI is that, you know, it's okay if you have a little bit of noise in your data as long as you have enough data, right? That's the whole idea. It's like, hey, you could just spend, you know, all the time, spend till eternity essentially just sitting down and making sure every single record is clean, or you can just make sure it's reasonably clean and then have enough of that data and the models can actually still perform quite well. Like, you know, a lot of these LLMs are trained on public websites, right? Like scraping essentially looking at whatever is out there in the public, and a lot of it is misinformation. There's a lot of it that's not accurate. But then you see that the LLMs come out. So I think there's definitely a hope for, as long as the noise in your data is less than half, if you have enough data, you'll be able to actually still train useful models. But that's web scale. Like if you're an organization operating on a very specific data set, you're trying to sort of figure out what's the risk of, you're an insurance company, you're trying to assess the risk of this person catching this particular disease, and you're trying to, you know, feed that into your quote generation process or your premium calculation estimation, anything that you're building, obviously you can't take that approach. Your data is finite. If you're doing cancer research, I remember I had a colleague medical school at the University of Michigan, and we were discussing how we could sort of, you know, I would bring the AI or ML expertise, you'd bring the data set, and they're like, oh, we have the largest cancer data set on the planet, and it turned out that they have information about 300 patients, right? Like, so, okay, that's large in that specific context for them. But like, if you have 300 subjects in your data set, you can't take that approach of saying, you know what, I'm not going to worry about cleaning it. So it depends how much you invest in it, depends on what you're trying to do, what your risk tolerance is. But also, a lot of what people are doing these days is that they are managing these cloud data warehouses, they're managing these complex pipelines. So what we do is that we try to sort of take that off of their plate so they can focus on things that require deep expertise, like cleaning your data, you know, incorporating your business logic and so on.
Yeah. So you're getting to one of my questions was, what do you think the role of AI is for data engineering, data pipelines, and data ops?
That's a very good question. I think from a data ops perspective, right, if we sort of put everything else away, like AI brings a lot of automation. Like if we think about where AI beats the best human expert is that AI is extremely patient, right? You cannot hire a data scientist and expect them to analyze the whole, you know, a whole corpus of, I don't know, whatever is available on the internet, right? You can train models. Obviously, you have to pay the computational cost for it, but you can be, the AI is much better when the task is too tedious. Humans don't want to do it, or they cannot do it because it's too complex. When it comes to data ops, excuse me, I think what we're betting on at Kibo, and what I genuinely believe is the trend, is that anything that's repetitive, tedious, meaning people don't wake up in the morning wishing that they could be doing that, right? Like, for example, people don't, you know, if you're a moderately sized deployment of Snowflake, you're basically going to be looking at millions of queries. No one wakes up in the morning looking forward to staring at the 2-page long query and figuring out why it's taking 3 hours, right? Or when it's too tedious, humans don't like to do it. It's repetitive, that's something that needs to get done pretty frequently, but it's too complex for humans to do it well. That's going to be delegated to the AI. And I think humans are going to focus on understanding the business constraints and the business logic, and the best solutions are the ones that combine those. So for example, something as simple as, hey, make sure you save me money, but you don't hurt performance, right? That's a high level goal. Anyone understands what that means, but like, what does it mean to hurt performance? What's considered good performance? Varies from organization to organizations, teams to teams, applications to applications. You and your coworker sitting next to you might have a very different understanding of what's good performance. For your application, maybe if it's something taking longer than 2 seconds, it's too slow. But the other person is training an AI model, as long as that query finishes within an hour, he's happy. So we allow people to define their own performance SLAs. They get to define their own performance guardrails. And then, for example, we train reinforcement learning agents that take automated actions in real time to reduce the cost of the infrastructure and improve performance and ensure that those SLAs don't get violated while respecting all the business logic that these data teams get to put in.
Yeah. And so even though, you know, people get very worried about AI taking their jobs, but really some of the best uses for AI are, as you said, they're tedious, repetitive tasks that people don't really wake up in the morning, roll out of bed and go, oh, I just can't wait to write 1500 more load scripts to get the raw data into our data lake. You know, that's where AI comes in handy. And then the data engineers and the architects can spend time talking to the business, understanding what sources should we be using. You know, like you said, performance wise, what kind of performance are we looking for? You know, what are the goals here? And understanding the business logic so that can go into the transformation engine properly. And then, of course, there's always the QA side of it. You've got to figure out, how do we test this to make sure that the results coming out the other side are really in line with what they should be, that are going to be of value to the company?
Absolutely. And I think that's a very common concern these days. People have seen what the likes of ChatGPT and Gemini and other LLMs are capable of doing. Like, as someone who comes from an academic background, like my entire career has been about, you know, building and you know, teaching and all of that stuff. Like, so I'm close to the like academic underpinnings of like AI and all of that stuff. But like, my message to those in your audience who are worried about AI taking away their jobs is that if you are worried that AI is going to take your job, it probably is. In other words, like, the solution is not to resist it. Like, one of the things that I see a lot is like, the CIO realizes that there's a need. They see the stuff like the Databricks, the AWS bill going through the roof. They turn around and tell the data team, we need to do some optimization. Here's a bunch of different solutions. And from my two decades of experience working in this area, it's like you can always find an excuse for why you need to build something in-house, right? Instead of adopting it. But if that's something that you're doing out of your fear of AI taking away your job, I think you're taking the wrong approach. You're going to get crushed because you're on the wrong side of history. This is happening. It's just a matter of when. The solution is to actually become an expert in AI. Go, you know, take an online class, how to best leverage AI, right? Not how to sort of protect the job that AI is going to take away. Because if you're doing something that AI can take away, you're probably doing the wrong thing. Go enhance your career. Like, you know, these days, you don't have to go to the University of Michigan to learn about AI and machine learning. That's a really fine institution if you want to do that. But like, if you're, you know, if you're already working, it's been like, you know, a couple of decades since you graduated, like go take an online class. Like there's a lot of free resources online. Educate yourself on, you know, machine learning, AI, different forms of it. And then look at the tools that are out there. See how you can use that AI as a multiplier for your own productivity, how you can get more productive, right? So I think that's the right approach is, okay, how do I best leverage AI? And when you do that, you become that much more valuable to your organization. And on top of that, I would also add that I have a lot of fun stories, you know, about this, but like if you're, for example, a media company, you shouldn't be building internal tooling for how to manage your Snowflake. Like whenever you're in industry and you're building something in-house that's not really core or critical to your own core business, you actually have the least job security because the next time that there's a production in force, they're going to be like, hey, what are those teams that are doing something that's so mission critical for what we do as a media company, as a grocery company, right? As a company that's in, you know, healthcare. Like this team over here, they spent half of their time trying to reduce our Snowflake bill. Well, we could just buy that off the shelf.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other teams that help our business grow and strong.
Yeah. And then, so that's where companies like Kibo and DataOps.live come in. It's like you guys built all of this stuff already. And that whole buy versus build question, I think you're spot on there, especially when times get tough. It's like, what is our core business? Do we really want to be a database software company writing all this code to manage the database? Somebody has already done that somewhere. And at some point, there's a total cost of ownership conversation, right? It's like, what is this really costing us? What you're talking about the people worrying about AI, when I went to work for Snowflake back in 2015, when they were pretty young, I was having that conversation with DBAs and DBA managers all the time, as the DBAs were looking at what Snowflake could do compared to, say, Oracle or Teradata, and going, but what are we going to do? You know, we're DBAs. We do backup and recovery. We do all of this other stuff. What are we going to do? And I said, you need to become an architect. You need to learn how to talk to the business and figure out what you should be doing with the data, not the, you know, do you really want a pager going off at midnight when you're on vacation with your family because the database went down? Okay, Snowflake solved that problem for you. So why would you want to keep doing that? Why wouldn't you want to, like you said, expand your career? And I think that is, you know, that's still the best advice today with the AI. Yeah, it's like, you know, figure out what the AI, what part of your job might AI do, and stuff that you really don't get that much pleasure out of yourself and don't see that much value in. And what can you do? How do you add value to the organization and help them use the cloud, use Snowflake, use AI to better advantage for your organization? That's exactly. Those are the people that are going to not have to worry, right? Continuing education is always the thing. Being open to learning these new things. I went from almost 30 years in the Oracle world to going to work for Snowflake and going, yeah, okay, I can see massive advantage there. You know, I learned how to deal with big data where I hadn't been before. I was trying to stay away from Hadoop and all of that. And then Snowflake, you know, did their thing with semi-structured data and JSON and all that. So I learned all about that and got to help people, you know, move forward and use more data that was available to them rather than just the structured. Absolutely. So, we just blew through our 30 minutes in no time flat, which is usually the case with us. So, what You know, what's next for you? Are there anything's coming up, meetups, events that Kibo's involved in that you want to let people know about?
Absolutely. There's a lot of data-related events where we will present that. But we're going to have a big booth at this upcoming Snowflake Summit. We're actually launching our, GA support for Databricks. So if you're using Databricks, if you're using Snowflake in any capacity, whether you're just about to start your journey or you're spending millions of dollars, it doesn't matter. We can actually save you a lot of time, save you a lot of money, but also boost your productivity. Whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, you can actually achieve it 10 times faster and get a much better ROI from your Snowflake or Databricks investments moving forward with Kibo.
Awesome. So Snowflake Summit, next big thing. So folks that are going to Snowflake Summit, take a look for the Kibo booth. And so what's the best way for folks to connect with you?
They can either find me on LinkedIn or, go to Kibo.ai, check out some of, get a personalized demo of what AI can do for, or look at some of our case studies, or just reach out to me. My email is Barzan@Kibo.ai. If you're interested in any of these subjects, we would love to chat.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Barzan, and the insights on the industry and AI and data ops and all of that. It's very interesting. So we could, go on and have a conversation for probably several hours about all of these topics. So I really appreciate you taking the time and being here today.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Hope your voice gets better soon.
thank you so much. I think I'm almost going over it. Hopefully in a couple of days I'll be over it.
Awesome. Thanks to everyone else for joining us online or watching the replay. Please join me again in 2 weeks. My guest is going to be Snowflake Data Superhero and Data Modeling Aficionado and the new Frictionless Czar for DataOps.live, my buddy Keith Belanger. So as always, be sure to like the replays from today's show and tell your friends about the True Data Ops podcast. Don't forget to go to TrueDataOps.org and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time, this is Kent Graziano, the Data Warrior, signing off for now.